directly.
Which is 10% of the population of Gaza, incidentally.
Yeah, and these days, it's interesting in the media, you know, like before the war, before October 2023, the population of Gaza was 2.3 million. These days, I'm seeing people saying the population of Gaza is 2.1 million or 2 million.
Yep. I mean, how else do you want to defy genocide? I mean, it's very clear what's going on. I mean, it's very clear that it's genocide because Netanyahu and others have said they've invoked the Amalek genocide from the Book of Samuel, and they've made it very clear. You had the ICJ, you had in the South African presentation, you had the video of Netanyahu saying, we will commit the Amalek genocide against these people, remember Amalek. And then you had soldiers on the ground dancing triumphantly and chanting in these religious Jewish chants, invoking the Amalek genocide. So the commander-in-chief up here, the foot soldiers down here, you get the order from on top, and you get the implementation of that order on the ground. It's very clear what's going on.
Chris, the Western powers, you know, getting back to the UK, France, Germany, the Netherlands, Canada, they're all saying the Palestinian people have the right to exercise self-determination. There must be a two-state solution in which a state of Palestine exists in peace and security alongside the state of Israel, and Palestinians have that inalienable right to self-determination. But Hamas cannot be a part of any future government. So it begs the question, right? If they've got the right to self-determination, there's got to be a Palestinian state with elections, but the Western powers say Hamas can't be part of it.
You probably remember the elections. I was there in Palestine in January 2006, when was the last time, incidentally, there were elections in Palestine. And what happened was, in the previous September or so, Sharon had so-called disengaged from Gaza. He pulled out the settlers. Of course, he remained in total control, which is the definition of occupation, effective control. And then what happened is there was a big debate about the elections, and Israel and the Americans and the Europeans and the Brits and the usual suspects all calculated that Hamas would win enough to split the Palestinians, and that they wouldn't get enough votes to win government. And for many people like Sharon and others who agreed to these elections, it was an ideal way to split the Palestinians and to push away further the idea of a two-state solution, because you needed a united negotiating partner on the other side of the table to bring about this two-state solution. So for many Israelis and many Americans and others, it was a way simply of taking the pressure off Israel to have a two-state solution. In fact, what happened in reality, it was a massive, colossal miscalculation, because Hamas won an overwhelming victory in what the Carter Center described as the free and fairest election ever held in the Middle East, which I assume, incidentally, includes all Israeli elections. So the question then was what to do. And the quartet met very swiftly at the end of January in London. And because of Israeli pressure, the Americans insisted within the quartet that the quartet impose a blockade on Gaza, that it isolate Hamas. And the rest is history. The rockets started pouring out, or the rockets intensified, because having told the people of Gaza and Palestine you must drink from the wellsprings of democracy, I mean, it was a big concession for Hamas, because the elections were held very much under the Oslo architecture. And of course, Oslo absolutely was part of, recognized Israel's right to exist, to live in peace alongside its neighbors, etc. So it was a massive concession from Hamas. You know, it had moved from being a terrorist organization to embracing democracy. And what did Hamas get in, for thanks for doing that? It got blockade, it got a series of wars, it got, increased isolation, the blockade was tightened. So when today people start saying, we want a two-state solution, but Hamas can't take part, they've had a long time to work this out. I mean, this was the policy in 2006, and it absolutely didn't work. All it did was strengthen Hamas. And surprise, surprise, that's what happens when you ban political parties. They go underground and they get stronger. I mean, there have been no lessons learned from the experience of 2006, and yet the quartet, The UN within it. I mean, there have been some notable exceptions. I mean, Alvaro de Soto, who I worked for, the great UN mediator, he actually resigned for this very point that, you know, you can't say, let's have a democracy, but by the way, we're banning one of your parties that stood in the election. And that's where we've arrived again at today. We're saying to the Palestinians, we want you to have your own state, we want you to be self-governed, but you can't elect the most popular party. We've decided to ban that. It doesn't work, and it's not going to lead anywhere.
Last question, Christopher Gunness, and thank you so much for your time, taking out your crystal ball. How do you see this ending? How do you see the genocide coming to a close? Like everybody says, only the United States can end the war, but it's not going to, because Israel and the United States are conjoined. I can't imagine Trump really ending the war based on justice and international law. It's not going to happen. So I presume it will eventually happen. Can the Europeans and the most powerful Arab states actually bring the war to an end? Do you see this happening?
Well, it depends what you mean by how can this end, because clearly ending the war is not going to be the end. So if the guns felt silent in 5 minutes' time, that would certainly not be the end of the conflict, and it would certainly not even necessarily be the beginning of peace. And let's not forget that Raphael Lemkin, who was one of the architects, well, he coined the word genocide, and he was one of the great architects of the Genocide Convention. He was very clear that genocide is a continuum. And for the Palestinians, it began actually before the Nakba. It began, I think, when the British, as the retreating colonial power, handed over half of Palestine to just over 10% of the population. And the Zionist movement, you know, one of the big 19th century political, nationalist political movement, like all the rest of them, saw an opportunity and pounced. You know, the genocide continued through the Nakba. It continued through the various wars, through the occupation of 1967. The genocide continued with the blockade of Gaza that was imposed in earnest in 2007. It continued with the various flare-ups in violence. I've mentioned the Great March of Return in 2012. There were others in 2014. And now we're seeing continuation of the genocide now. And to end a genocide is a very big ask. So there's the question of a ceasefire, and you know, speculation in Israel, in the Hebrew press, is very much that even Netanyahu now is under enormous pressure from allies. Of course, his Jewish supremacist coalition wants the war to continue because they feel they can defeat Hamas, which of course is another of the great lies which Israel has been peddling. But you ask about a two-state solution. I mean, I think that whatever the Americans and the Europeans do in terms of imposing sanctions on Israel and trying to bring the Israelis to their senses, I think the cause of peace has been set back for generations. I mean, all of the sort of liberals that I knew when I lived in Palestine, on both the Israeli and the Palestinian side, that's all kind of vanished, particularly on the Israeli side. There is no empathy. You don't see Palestinian suffering depicted on Israeli television, which is very much, by the way, of how you commit a genocide. You desensitize your population to the suffering and the individuality of the other. And that's been done. And I think that lack of empathy is going to take generations to address. I think the Israeli media and politicians have been very, very clever at inculcating into their populations a very strident and robust Holocaust psychosis, which basically says the narrative is, if we don't do a genocide against them, they'll do one against us. So, you know, that mindset is going to take generations to go. And I think if it ever does go, and I think it might never go, what you're going to see is various rounds of violence, which will continue. And my own view, quite frankly, is that as far as I can see, I think these two belligerent parties are destined to live in a state of perpetual warfare. And I think that can only escalate. I think more people will die, more people will suffer. And I think that when history looks back, I think the people that will be blamed are A, obviously, the far-right, fascistic, Jewish supremacist coalition that is very much guiding this. Netanyahu, I think, will be particularly culpable because it will be seen by history, I think, that he propagated and continued this war in order to preserve his political career, in order to postpone that moment when he has to go to court to face corruption charges. And I think that history will also judge very harshly the politicians in the West, Keir Starmer, Donald Trump, Biden, Obama, and others who have been complicit in this ongoing genocide. And I think that history will also judge very harshly those who, like the millions of Germans during the Holocaust, sat on their hands and just watched the trains chug past the end of their garden. I think history will judge those who just sat there and didn't speak out and didn't hold their politicians to account very, very harshly indeed. So it's a shame on a whole generation, even though there are individuals within that who are quite clearly more culpable than others.
But in search of a truly final optimistic note, is there anything that gives you hope or makes you feel that there might be some hope for positive change and justice in Palestine, Chris?
Not particularly. I mean, I think that if I had to name one thing, I think it is the accountability mechanisms that we've seen mushroom since the start of this genocide. I think that the international justice mechanisms, even though they're not being activated, are there if any member states want to use them. We've got the arrest warrant against Netanyahu and Gallant. We've got the case in the International Court of Justice where they've demanded provisional measures. We've got the case, that was the genocide case, we've got the occupation advisory opinion where the ICJ has said there is the occupation is illegal, it must end as quickly as possible, and member states must take all action possible to prevent Israel continuing to inflict this illegal occupation on the Palestinians. And at the far lower level, inside specific national jurisdictions, the Hind Rajab Foundation, for example, has been doing amazing work in picking up from social media individuals who are criminally culpable and have gone to hold them to account. So there are chipping away, and it's water dripping on a stone, frankly. There are these accountability mechanisms which are very slowly turning. But I think big picture, Israel is doomed to live in a state of perpetual insecurity. And I think it has inflicted that on itself. I think there have been historic moments in the history of Israel when Israelis and their politicians could have grasped the peace if they'd wanted to. I think that there have been several moments, even in the last 19 months, where politicians in Israel could have decided to end this, and they decided for their own selfish political reasons not to. And, shame on them, because what has happened is that tens of thousands of innocent people have died, and my fear is that tens of thousands more will also die.
Christopher Gunness is the former UN Director for Strategic Communications and Advocacy in the Middle East and Chief Spokesperson for UNRWA. These days, Gunness is the Executive Director of the Myanmar Accountability Project. Watch our complete conversation at greenplanetmonitor.net. While you're there, subscribe. With your help, we'll keep sharing stories about Earth systems, human development, justice, and science to listen to, read, and watch. Approaching a dangerous precipice, the front edge of which is in Palestine. A people's tribunal on the Gaza genocide declared last week in Sarajevo, and dangerous forces are pushing us toward the abyss. The Sarajevo declaration of the Gaza tribunal followed 3 days of public hearings at the International University of Sarajevo, the capital of Bosnia and Herzegovina. Inspired by past people's tribunals, most notably the 1966 Russell Tribunal on the U.S. War on Vietnam and the 2003-2005 World Tribunal on the U.S.'s War on Iraq, the Gaza Tribunal was launched in London in November 2024 Here's an abbreviated version of the Sarajevo Declaration read by Penny Green, Professor of Law and Globalization at Queen Mary University of London and the Gaza Tribunal's acting chair. A bit of echo at the start, it goes away.
In the Declaration of Sarajevo, the Gaza Tribunal declares our collective moral outrage at the continuing genocide in Palestine, and our solidarity with the people of Palestine, our commitment to working with partners across global civil society to end the genocide and to ensure accountability for perpetrators and enablers, redress for victims and survivors, the building of a more just international order and a free Palestine. In the declaration, we call out and condemn the myriad crimes of the Israeli regime. We demand an immediate end to those crimes, including the occupation, the siege, the apartheid, and the genocide, and freedom for Palestinian prisoners. We defend UNRWA and other humanitarian actors on the ground and demand accountability for the attacks on them. We call on all governments and on regional and international organizations to act, and we denounce those who have been complicit, from states to media corporations and others. In the declaration, we denounce the wave of persecution and crackdowns on human rights defenders, peace activists, students, academics, workers, professionals. And we honor those who stand up, who despite this persecution have had the courage and moral convictions to stand up and speak out. And we reject the unjust tactic of smearing as anti-Semites or supporters of terrorism all those who dare to speak up against the Israeli regime. We express our conviction that the struggles against all forms of racism, bigotry, and discrimination necessarily includes the equal rejection of all forms of Islamophobia, anti-Arab and anti-Palestinian racism, anti-Semitism, Zionism, apartheid, and settler colonialism, and we commit to fighting all such scourges. We also reject the destructive ideology of Zionism as the official state ideology of the Israeli regime, of the forces that colonized Palestine and established the Israeli state on its ruins, and of pro-Israel organizations and their proxies today. Instead, the declaration insists, in the words of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that all human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights, and that there are no exceptions to this rule. The tribunal calls in the declaration for decolonization across the land and an end to the ethno-supremacist order and the replacement of Zionism with a dispensation founded on equal human rights for Christians, Muslims, Jews, and others. Further in the declaration, we honor the courageous resistance and resilience of the Palestinian people and the movement of millions standing in solidarity with them. We reaffirm the right of the Palestinian people to resist in accordance with international law. We recall that the Palestinian right to self-determination is jus cogens and erga omnes and is non-negotiable and axiomatic. We respect Palestinian aspirations and recognize full Palestinian agency and leadership over all the decisions affecting their lives. In the text, we also express our grave concern at the state and direction of international relations, international politics, and international institutions, their failings, and the attacks on those international institutions that have challenged genocide and apartheid in Palestine. We demand immediate action to isolate, contain, and hold accountable the Israeli regime through universal boycott, divestment, sanctions, a military embargo, suspension from international organizations, and the prosecution of its perpetrators, individual criminal accountability for all those implicated in war crimes, crimes against humanity, genocide, gross violations of human rights, or complicity. We applaud the International Court of Justice for its ongoing historic genocide case against the Israeli regime and for its landmark advisory opinions, and South Africa for bringing the genocide case to the ICJ. And we call for expediting the case of the ICC against Israeli perpetrators, for state parties to meet their obligations to arrest them, and for the US to cease its persecution of the court. And we call for full implementation of the pronouncements of the two courts in The Hague and the historic UNGA resolution of September 2024. We also express our admiration for the independent special procedures of the UN Human Rights Council, for their expert contributions and for their strong and principled voices in holding the Israeli regime to account and defending the human rights of the Palestinian people, as well as for UN agencies that have acted to defend the rights of the Palestinian people, foremost among them UNRWA. Finally, in the Declaration of Sarajevo, we warn that the world is approaching a dangerous precipice, the front edge of which is in Palestine, and that both key international organizations and most countries of the world have failed in defending the human rights of the Palestinian people and in responding to the Israeli regime's genocide in Palestine. And we conclude the declaration by declaring, and I quote, "The challenge of justice now falls to the people of conscience everywhere, to civil society and to social movements, to all of us. As such, our work in the coming months will be dedicated to meeting this challenge. Palestinian lives are at stake. The international moral and legal order is at stake. We must not fail. We will not relent." And there ends the declaration. Thank you.
Penny Green is Professor of Law and Globalization at Queen Mary University of London and the acting chair of the Gaza Tribunal, which just wrapped up 3 days of hearings in Sarajevo, the capital of Bosnia-Herzegovina. We'll link to the Gaza Tribunal and its Gaza Declaration at greenplanetmonitor.net. That's it for today's GPM, a listener-supported podcast coming to you from Earth Chronicle Productions in the Netherlands. Listen to, read, and watch more Earth stories at greenplanetmonitor.net. Find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube, and our home base, Blueberry. We're also on Canada's Harbinger Media Network. I'm David Kattenberg. Over and out for now. Thank you.
Thank you.